Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
And welcome to Thursday edition of Point Taken. I am Steve, Kristen Bry alongside.
Steve with a haircut.
I got a fresh haircut. It was getting a little shaggy.
Looks good.
You know, here's my dilemma, totally personal, unrelated to what we're going to talk about. I wish I could just grow my hair long and just forget about it. Never a man bun, but I'd pony it up. Honest to God, I would. It would be so much easier.
You'd pony it up?
I just tie it and be behind my head. Yeah, that long.
So you want a ponytail, but not a bun?
Women are men, a total ban on it. And I'll probably allude to that in my if Steve were the world. Don't like the look, hate the look.
But a ponytail's fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is quite the distinction.
It's specific, too. It's
very specific. I don't know exactly aesthetically what the big difference is for you, but...
I have no idea. Yeah. Anyway, politics is what we generally talk about, and we're certainly going to talk about politics in the first half hour. We'll get to the Milwaukee stuff with our guy, Jeremy Janine.
Early,
because he's 10:30 to 11:30, because we have an early out for Brewers today.
Yeah.
Obviously, the swing game in that series against the Detroit Tigers is coming up, I think 12:10 is the first pitch. So, anyway, we're going to have a quicker show, but... The sort of story from yesterday, Democratic candidate, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. Oof.
All right, we have the audio. So this is...
Yes.
Do we define this as leaked audio? Because it wasn't a private meeting. It was a...
I don't know.
It was a Democratic meeting in Janesville. Like, it was like that county's... Is it Rock County? Rock County Dems
Insider
in Janesville.
Audio, yeah.
And she was addressing them, and the audio got sent to WISN. And here is what she had to say.
I am committed to leadership in both the Senate and the Assembly that we are going to work together to get this budget across the finish line. I will say that I am committed to having a budget done before I swear in. And we are going to do this. We are going to do our negotiations behind a curtain. So that we are not doing a circular firing squad within the Democratic Party, because we have got to make a difference in people's lives.
So I think the operative thing that people are side-eyeing with that is behind a curtain.
Well, yeah, it's bad choice of words.
Bad choice of words.
Especially in a campaign.
And so, as you might imagine, this was an opportunity for not only Tom Tiffany, but other primary candidates to talk about. I think Kelda's words were, the best disinfectant is sunshine, was her...
Wow.
And so, yeah, this is... The thing for me about this is when I think about transition from becoming governor in your first year, in your first term, and within months needing to have a budget proposal, because that's where, like, the way our elections align is the same as our biennial budgets, right? So to a certain extent, you would expect them to already be working on this before they get inaugurated.
They all have transitional budgets, ideas for a budget.
Yeah. And so I can't. And she has, as of right now, I don't think she has clarified since yesterday what she was trying to say or doubled down on what she said.
A spokesperson did.
Oh, what did they say?
I'm looking it up right now. Keep talking while I'm looking it up.
So it's, I unfortunately will not be here tomorrow to see what Joe and Bill have to say about this. I don't know if this is making a mountain out of a molehill as far as the actual process, but I think when you say those words behind a curtain or not being transparent or not having the public weigh in general, I'm not sure that's where the electorate is. Like, I think the electorate wants to be involved, but I also think this is like pointing to potentially Democratic leadership if they were to get a trifecta. How much are they going to box Republicans out?
Yeah, I'm going to get to that in a second. Here's what the campaign spokesperson said for Rodriguez. It referred to the transition period between between Election Day and Inauguration Day, standard transition planning that every incoming governor does, seeking input from legislators to prepare to govern on day one. Okay, so I get that, and that's certainly a cover story. But the word choice is horrific.
The word choice is not great.
Because we've been... talking all about transparency and how we want to, you know, put sunshine, as Kelderoy said. We want to be able to see the process. And she has to look no further than her governor, Tony Evers, who actually worked with Republicans who controlled the legislature to get budgets done.
But I think what she's taking a shot at is that the Evers administration didn't always communicate well with Democrats, like with the other Democrats, right? And so I think in that is layered in a criticism of Evers, which then the Evers administration fired back. Like, this has now become a little bit of a circular firing squad.
I mean, Governor Tony Evers, who won two statewide elections for governor, who she probably should thank for her name recognition, maybe, because she's lieutenant governor. Underneath his administration, I don't know. I know she's also elected, but I mean, come on here. This is a bad choice, and it doesn't help her candidacy, which right now she's just a candidate. That's all she is, besides lieutenant governor.
Okay, so what's interesting about this, you were gone on Friday, and this was a philosophical conversation we had with Joe and Bill as far as transparency goes, because I had come across a clip from Sarah Isger, who is the editor of SCOTUS blog, and she has a new book out, and she was on a podcast, and she was talking about transparency, especially when it came to the revolution. So I played it for Joe and Bill and surprised them with it and got their reaction. But now that we're talking about this and it's relevant, I'm going to play it for you and get your reaction.
Transparency is not our friend in government. I read this interesting theory about why the American Revolution succeeded when the French Revolution failed, and I'm kind of obsessed with it now. So when our guys are in Independence Hall writing the Constitution, it is hot
as hell
and miserable, and they shut the windows because they didn't want anyone hearing the conversation while it was going on. And so they were allowed to, like, propose bad ideas. In the French Revolution, it was all conducted in public. And so the people who, you know, got boos or cheers were affected by that. And you ended up with a populist mob. And of course, it failed spectacularly. And transparency is a part of that story. So when we introduce C-SPAN to Congress, nobody is down there actually having real debates on the Senate floor anymore. The point is to compromise and to log roll and to make that sausage. Having everyone watching you do it will make no one want to offer a compromise where it can be used against you in a primary campaign.
Thoughts?
She's making an argument. Yeah, I guess. But here's the thing. Here's the thing.
If you were watching YouTube, you should have seen Steve's face as he was listening. So you can go back and rewind.
I find this idea that somehow transparency, it almost sounds like she's making like a bad idea. C-SPAN is a tremendous asset.
So that's what the philosophical conversation was on Friday, as far as does it introduce mob rule? Or,
why is it always an extreme example?
I don't know. What do you think philosophical debates usually are?
No, I don't like that, though.
Okay.
There's an example where actually closed session things are important and critical. We often see those in development, early stage development stories. We see them in personnel matters with leaders. But this is not that. This is a budget process. It's the people's money. You said the wrong words, and to try to hide some idea that maybe transparency is a bad thing when it comes to budget. No, it's not. One of the problems we have in this state is we can't get along. Her boss, our governor, showed an example to her that she apparently didn't get. And I would not be surprised if this just basically blows up her campaign. She was maybe the front runner in some weird way. If I was a Democrat, I wouldn't vote for her. I don't trust her anymore. Big words, yeah, but no, I don't trust her. Because it seems like she's being sneaky. And for this idea about talking to the other side, it sounds to me, and maybe I'm taking too much out of it, that she's saying, you know what, Dems will figure out the budget, just like Republicans said, we'll figure out the budget and we'll hand it to the governor. It's bad when Republicans do it, and it's just as bad when Democrats do it. And that's what it sounded like to me. Democrats, we know what the people need. I edited myself. BS. Absolute BS. Shame on her for saying it. I hope it blows her campaign up.
Well, I get to interview her on Wednesday.
Congratulations.
So I'll come back and say, I'll ask her about this, and I'll report back.
Play that clip for her, see what she says about it.
I'm not sure we have audio like that.
All right, we got to take a break. We're late. Theme. Why not? I mean, what do you think? You're a Democrat. You have to vote for one of these people. It's not a good look.
I think she misspoke. I'm excited to ask her about it next week.
What was the context of the, why were you in, just you're interviewing all the candidates?
So there's an organization called Electing Women, and they're having an event for their members in Madison next Wednesday, and I'm moderating it with the four female candidates.
All right. Well, let me ask you to ask them this.
Okay.
If it's a bad idea for Republicans to just want to do what Republicans do, is it any better that Democrats just want to do what Democrats want to do?
Well, you know what my answer is going to be. As far as I I do not subscribe to, you know, there was an AOC had a quote yesterday in regards to the fact that Democrats for the last 10 years have been trying to have a federal ban on partisan gerrymandering, and yet it was Republicans the ones who didn't want to do it. So now this is what you get, right, as far as the wah-wah-ness of Virginia. I don't subscribe to that. I want us all to get back to better governing and less partisan BS tactics. And so I'm going to say, yes, I would like to, get to a point, if even if Democrats get the trifecta next year, going into next year, I would like, it's instead of a pendulum swing all the way to the left, to have some kind of like actual compromise, actual good governance, actual consideration, instead of this toxic politics that we've had for a while. And I don't, someone has end up having to be the bigger person if we ever want to get there. Yeah. I know a lot of people don't feel like that. Like we've said before, there's some people who want revenge. They want to push everything through. And this is people on the left. I am not one of those people.
If you're one of the, our side knows better, our side has to win. And we have these what might be rare scenarios where we have total control. You get to do whatever you want. That's the only kind of government we're ever going to have again, because both sides will just keep flipping. Once the public gets worked up and upset about what one side's doing, they'll put the other folks in play. It's just maddening to me. It results, I would argue, in some of the problems we have, that where people will literally defend things they know aren't true because their party tells them to say that. It's this mindset that all Republicans are evil, all Democrats are evil, and you know, libtards and all that nonsensical stuff that passes for intelligent political debate. I don't want that anymore. And if I hear any candidate on either side saying things that on its face doesn't sound right to the general public, that you're going to go behind a curtain. What is this, the Wizard of Oz? What are you doing? That's stupid. And for her to say, I get it's a private event or whatever it was. It wasn't said to a news person where you kind of clean it up and say the right things. But again, if you're a real candidate and a real political leader, you know what to say all the time, even when cameras aren't around you. Maybe some dude or dudette with a little audio recorder. You got to say the right thing all the time. You got to mean the right thing all the time. If you don't do that, I have no use for you at all.
High bar.
Yeah, but that's the way I think. I didn't go into closed session as mayor and act differently. Why would I do that? That's what leaders are. That's why we are absent.
You never misspoke?
Misspeaking is one thing. And if that, she didn't say that's what it was.
Yeah.
If she says that, that's a different story. Maybe she will when you interview her. That's not what she said it was. If you act differently based on your environment, context, scenery, I'm sorry. I have to question your motives and your motivation and why you're doing what you're doing. Especially for elected officials, because man, the bar has been set so low. And I, you know, I'm a Republican. You're a Democrat, or however you identify. We got to do better here. This sucks. And I think there's a growing number of Americans and Wisconsinites who believe what I just said.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you see a growing number of people who identify as independents, right? Because I think most people don't necessarily identify. And I don't know if there makes a difference of how their ideological lean. But I think you're having an increasing amount of people who don't want to associate their identity with a specific party because there is frustrations with the parties.
Yeah. Stop normalizing and defending stupidity. That's what's on this full display every day. Radio, TV, you name it. It's just maddening to me. Stop it. You're smarter than that.
Hey, WTMJ's John Mercure here. If you're as jazzed about summer as I am, I've got a great place you can get some ideas or refine some things that you've actually been thinking about. It's Saturdays at 1 o'clock. It's Experience Wisconsin. We check in with communities, people, events across the state, give you some super cool ideas of what you can do to get into summer. This week, we are joined by Manitowoc and iconic Ishnala Supper Club. It's Experience Wisconsin, Saturdays at 1 on WTMJ.
Hey, this is WTMJ's Steve Scafidi with Milwaukee Weight Loss. Worked for me. 45 pounds last year, another 8 to 10 this year, depending on what day you're talking about. It's the secret to losing up to 1 pound of fat per day. At Milwaukee Weight Loss, they have the secret. Doctor-developed, natural, easy to follow, great coaches. You lose the weight fast, naturally, safely, no drugs or injections, no serious side effects, none of the prepackaged, gimmicky things. They reset your metabolism. With your help, you can keep the weight off for good with a coach for ongoing support, and they're the best. Their program, get this, costs up to half as much and works up to twice as fast as some of these other programs. Go to MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com today, right now, schedule your free consultation. I've talked to so many people. Had a meeting on Tuesday with somebody who lost more than 75 pounds from Milwaukee Weight Loss. That's the magic. Many patients, 20 to 30 pounds in a month or two. Pound per day. Sound good? Got a big event coming up, wedding, reunion, travel. And here's the kicker. Bonus for listening to this show. $200 off with their spring special. Book your free consultation at MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. That's MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. All right, got a lot of text information to give you. All right, so I've got Salute to Service going on. The nomination period has begun. All right, so I need great stories. Heroes in your life. First responders. Fire, police, EMTs, dispatchers, healthcare providers, frontline medical professionals, anyone who fits that category. You can nominate them. Just text the word SALUTE, S-A-L-U-T-E, to 855-616-1620. It's open until May 8th. But don't wait, because I've already got a bunch that are coming in. I'm going to look at the first batch this weekend. Start those interviews. Start those conversations about who you're nominating and why. So that's all part of our Salute to Service presented by the great folks at Waterstone Bank. So that's one thing. Two, the new Scafidiology is up and live. Brilliant, fascinating conversation about language and the alphabet with Danny Bate. Wrote a great book.
How'd you find this guy?
I get pitched on a lot of things. I don't often bite, but it was from a great publisher in New York, and he called from Prague, Czech Republic. The guy's brilliant. Linguist, author, smart, funny, and as I do in the podcast, as I tell you, relate to him in the podcast, he weaves history into it, like the origin of the alphabet. Egypt, our 26 letters, Egyptian roots. How the language evolved. It's not static.
It's definitely not static. Why, that's why there's a word of the year every year from Merriam-Webster that's like a made-up word is now in the vernacular.
But I'm not generally a huge fan of that, but he told us and the audience on Scafidiology why that's a good thing. So it's a fascinating conversation. He's really, really good. So just text the word Steve, my name, S-T-E-V-E, and you can listen to that podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and every couple of weeks I give you a new one. I got some great ones coming up. We do another one with Rose Gray. I've got Alex Strofe going to interview me, sort of a flip the script. First time I've ever been interviewed on the Scafidiology podcast. He won't tell me what he's going to ask me in advance, so we'll see where that one goes. I've got Dr. Howard Fuller, and Preston Morgan. That's coming up in about a month or so.
Did you already do that one?
No, we're recording it next week. Yeah, so big, big stuff. And then what do you got on the text?
What do I got? The newsletter?
Your newsletter, yes.
That's where you can get everything as far as...
All the links are there.
And also, someone asked us on the text line as far as missing Ask Us Anything yesterday. Well, one, we didn't do it because we had Mary Spicuzza on. But two, we're going to move Ask Us Anything to a bonus pod mailbag situation. Mm-hmm. So I, in the newsletter, am going to have a static survey where you can, throughout the week, ask us questions. And then every week or so, we'll do a mailbag. And then we can answer all of those. And we can also answer them more honestly, because it will be on a podcast, not
I might
on
even
air.
Swear.
11 o'clock on a Thursday means it's time for a full hour of City Stories with Urban Milwaukee President Jeremy Janine on Point Taken.
Let's wind it up early. All things Milwaukee news, politics, culture. Why the calling should be torn down immediately. All those things that we always like to talk about
this
with Jeremy Janine.
This first one's a big one.
It is a big one.
Potentially.
Jeremy Janine, welcome. UrbanMilwaukee.com.
Thanks for having me. And before we go further, I'd like to pause on a sad note and then a happy note. I'll end on that.
You got it.
I want to reflect on Dan Bice's passing. I know you guys have spent a lot of time on it. Mary Spicuzza, who's very close to him, came. But Dan Bice was a consummate professional. He was a competitor to me, but one of those great competitors that makes you better. And I think he did that for a lot of journalists in the state. We should all mourn his passing.
Well said.
Pivoting completely to a happy note, yesterday you had Benji Tim on the show.
Yeah.
And right now, if you are listening in a car and you are somewhere near downtown Milwaukee, a call back to last Thursday's show with Kristen, drive to that boat launch on South Water Street where it meets East Bruce Street. You will see the Viking Polaris going under the Hone Bridge right now.
I love that.
All right.
It's there right now. It's huge. And here come a couple hundred cruise passengers to Milwaukee.
Benji said the growth of this industry is absolutely amazing. Now we got the new dock being built. This is a big story that I don't know enough people understand why this is big. It's not just the cruisers. Yeah, it's great that they get to spend a time finding out about the Great Lakes. But all those other businesses here that benefit, it's good for Milwaukee business.
One thing I'm watching long term is, what is the impact to the airport with so many of these turnaround trips coming where one itinerary ends and another starts? Those people aren't getting back on the cruise boat. They're going to the airport and flying home. That should have a knockoff effect for more direct flights from Milwaukee to other locations.
Hmm. All right.
Thank you for the recommendation, because you were the one who told us that we should get Benji on.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
There we go.
Yeah. He'll be on again. As will you. Penny's Penny, today's performance.
We'll see. It's still a trial run.
All right. Here we go. Big news coming out of Milwaukee politics, but for something that has nothing to do actually with the city of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And that is Alderman Peter Bergelis is considering a run, according to a Democratic insider I spoke with, for the first congressional district seat that is long.
That's my district.
Mm-hmm. That's Steve's district. Steve at the moment is in the northeast corner of it. It is the district represented by Brian Style of Janesville, Paul Ryan before that, Mark Newman, mm-hmm. Peter Barca. I can't go back any further at this point. But you do not have to live in the district in Wisconsin or anywhere in the country to represent the district. You just have to live in the state.
I think that's surprising to some people.
Say it again. What?
In the U.S. House of Representatives, you do not have to live in the district. You just have to live in the state.
Did you know that?
I actually did not know that.
So a twist.
I did not know that.
So Peter,
but usually they do.
Because it helps.
Yeah, you,
it helps because you know the area you're trying to represent.
And the
people. But it is not. Yeah. I did not. Wow. That right. is color me surprised.
And that becomes an issue when we looked at Virginia earlier this week. These big redistricting battles, like borderlines might shift. Representatives could actually stay. Peter Bergelis lives in the Jackson Park neighborhood. There is a chance with the redistricting that seems to be headed towards the Wisconsin Supreme Court that he could end up in the district eventually.
Yeah, you never know.
That could be some political math long down the road. But Peter, as a prominent Democrat locally in Milwaukee, is trying to move more to a statewide level in this first district seat. If I'm him, the one thing I'm looking at is this is traditionally a lean Republican 2 points district. Chris Taylor just won it by a tremendous double-digit amount. So you might see, okay, 2026 this fall might be the window that I could get in. Then there's redistricting. Maybe you get locked in then because all of a sudden your former aldermanic district in the south side of Milwaukee keeps you in.
That is a great point. The lines matter, especially when you're talking about this part of the state. You shifted one way or the other a few miles or whatever, and it really changes the demographics and the voting patterns of the people, your constituents. Let's do it. We'll take an early break because there's so much to get to today. After the break, I'm fascinated by this one because you know me. Mulch the damn leaves. Stop picking them up. But this is related to a different story that we all experienced. Well, I didn't. I was in Vegas. But you guys experienced when it was raining like cats and dogs last week. We'll dig into that with Jeremy Janine. UrbanMilwaukee.com is where you can find his great journalism. Quick break, 620 WTMJ. He is Jeremy Janine, joins us every Thursday, a little bit earlier because we have an early out for Brewers Tigers game coming up right here on 620 WTMJ, the flagship station of the Brewers. We've got a decent season going, so, I mean, lots to be excited about. They've had some injury problems, but definitely tune in for the broadcast with the guys out there in Detroit. All right, Jeremy, because it's always asked about the tchotchke shop. What is it? Where is it? What can they find?
Urban Milwaukee, the store, urbanmilwaukeethestore.com, 755 North Milwaukee Street, corner of Milwaukee and Mason, all things Milwaukee and Wisconsin pride. Get yourself a t-shirt today to show off your Milwaukee love, and then show those guns out because it's warm out.
Guns out. Sun's out, guns out. It actually looks like a spectacular day today.
It was beautiful this morning.
All right. I'm going to let you sort of set this up. I'm not a fan of, you know this already, the community's picking up any leaves at all, unless it's a park.
But that's because you're assuming that people have their
own culture. Trust me. I've had this. It would be cheaper for communities to give people a mulching lawnmower than to do what they do. Because this costs hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. Go, Jeremy.
Last Wednesday, when Steve was enjoying the sun of Las Vegas.
Yes, I was.
Kristen and I were getting deluged with rain, oof, along with everyone else in Milwaukee and across much of Wisconsin. We just heard Neil Doyle talk about the number of tornadoes that were there. I think there was even one in or near Oak Creek, and I had a moment of concern about your house, and then I heard it was heading towards IKEA, and I had a moment of concern about Swedish meatballs.
Quick aside, I'm playing blackjack, and you can't have a phone, so I'm looking at my ring pick to see how bad it was as I'm playing blackjack, which I don't advise.
And did you win?
Yes.
There we go. Mm-hmm. So the thing we heard the next day from Mayor Cavalier Johnson and Commissioner Jarrell Kruschke, and I'll quote Kruschke, a lot of folks are thinking that leaves caused a lot of this water. He's referring to flooding and catch basin backup. That is not the case. It is a lot of debris. It is a lot of trash. And then I spoke to a DPW representative and said that that's coming from people in the field, that the actual DPW workers are reporting back that it's, you know, the 7-Eleven gulp mug that's blocking the drain, not leaves. But what emerged afterwards when I printed that, because I thought it was an interesting quote, based on my own observations, was Alderman Bauman issued a press release with some photos of himself cleaning up leaves out of gutters. A number of other readers of Urban Milwaukee reached out to me with photos. There was a lot of leaves. There was a lot of quick surface flooding that was resolved, thankfully, by some citizen heroes going out in the middle of the storm with stakes and rakes and clearing out the drains. But Steve, I know, wants to talk about we should mulch them in the yard. The big problem came last fall, right before Thanksgiving. A lot of leaves fell later last year because of the warming weather, and then it snowed really quick on December 1st, and they were buried, and many of them are still on the street today.
I looked it up. You can buy a mulching lawnmower for about $229, $250. Not the best one, but a good one. And look, I understand leaves are a pain in the butt, but mulching them into your lawn is actually great for your lawn. It would minimize this type of stuff. I'm not blaming it on the leaves. Garbage is a bigger problem. And the fact that here's what you should do if you're a city, a Milwaukee resident. When you know a storm's coming like this, go to your nearby drain, pull back whatever's there, help the city out. Why would you not be a good neighbor to other people? This laziness that I see all over, not just in the city, everywhere. Garbage, pick it up. Walk around, pick it up. It was Earth Day the other day. My goodness, people, don't be so lazy.
And I want to shout out one thing to do exactly what Steve's talking about in an organized fashion. There is adoptyourdrain.com.
I just learned about this. Literally, we were talking about this on Friday. My friend Carol told me about it. I was like, I love this. And it also feels like, why do we pay property taxes? but it is a good thing that you can go officially adopt your drain on your block.
I love that. Do it.
And what that means is simply look at the drain every now and then. Yeah. And if there's stuff blocking it, that's going to cause flooding during a storm. City's eventually going to street sweep it, but it might not happen before that storm. Just save your winter shovel, go over there, push it out of the way, make sure it's not going to be pushed right into the way of the water so it pushes it right back on top. Yeah. But do your little bit to make your own block better.
Yeah, again, I don't want to come down on people, but I'm coming down on people. You got to be proactive with this stuff. For example, I know that our neighbors, the Seaperts, they'll go clean the drain before the storms come. They're in their 80s. My God, they're doing it. Why can't someone who's 30 or 40 or 50 do it?
Maybe don't litter. If you're someone,
yeah, don't. Like, what is that about? That also, I literally will pick up something that I see on my way to my car, which is probably not advisable given all the crap you could get from doing that. But I just can't stand the sight of litter. It just drives me nuts.
Okay.
Am I just wired differently?
No, I try and pick up
the answer is
one piece of litter every day.
The answer is yes to that question.
All right. I think we've gotten Steve's feelings about this.
Yes,
and
loudly
the
and
lesson
clearly.
Is take care of your own drain.
Yeah.
Help everybody out.
Adopt a drain.
And also, DPW, pick up the leaves.
Yes.
Because there's still some.
If they're required to, they got to do it.
All right. Did we settle it?
Can we
move on?
Not to me, but let's move on.
And one thing, the Common Council will not move on from this immediately. There's a communication item coming to discuss this.
Yes.
Andrea Pratt is leading it, but you know Alderman Bauman's going to have thoughts. The administration's probably going to have thoughts about his changes to parking in this district that were a very controversial thing, and that might be inhibiting leaf cleaning, and we'll hear and have that out soon.
All right. Sounds good. He's Jeremy
Bring
Jean.
That back, yeah.
He's Jeremy Jean, Steve Scafidi, I'm Kristen Bry, and this is Point Taken.
Oh, that's an appropriate song, Jeremy Jean. UrbanMilwaukee.com is where you find their great work, great reporting, and they got some great folks working there as well. This one takes us into a contract fiasco, and then we got another one, a sad one on. It's good news on a sad story. So let's start with the contract fiasco involving healthcare.
So back in February, news broke that, hey, Milwaukee County employees, you might not have health insurance at the moment.
And I remember you breaking that. Yeah,
boy,
yeah.
That was a fiasco. And what happened was Tony Mays, the individual who directly oversaw it in the Human Resources Department, he was terminated.
Immediately.
Essentially immediately, yeah. And the coverage never lapsed, but the administration ended up putting the county board in a box saying you basically need to improve this or United Healthcare has us over a barrel. Essentially, they do have us over a barrel now. We need to accept this agreement. So the county ended up locked in for the next 5 years to this $450 million agreement that I think everyone agrees there should have been more vetting on. Now what's happened is Tony Mays's boss, Chief Human Resources Officer Margot Franklin, a David Crowley appointee, has resigned. And what she said back at the time publicly about Tony Mays was, my job is not to do the job of my employees. We bring them in. We hire them. We trust their expertise. We trust them to do the jobs that we hire them to do. Now, I want to clarify that she resigned. David Crowley's administration accepted her resignation. She was not terminated. But we've now had the second person leave the administration, and this would have been the person one step up the rung before you get to the county executive that was responsible for this issue.
Do you think, so let's say, I mean, maybe even before the primary election, between this and transit, how much of this will impact Crowley's campaign for governor?
We've seen all of a sudden a willingness to, for the candidates to be more aggressive in Sarah Rodriguez, and I think you guys talked about that before I was on today even. I suspect this issue isn't going to go entirely away. I don't know that it resonates with voters because it gets into health insurance, and it's not sexy, but it is serious.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Real quick before we go to the top of the hour news. So good news, but also still too many people dying of overdoses.
Yes, we have... The high-level good news is overdose deaths in Milwaukee County, so I'm talking county, not just the city, fell to, and this is still a staggering number, 387 in 2025, but that is a 42.5% decline from the high in 2022 of 674. We've kind of, as a society, have now learned a lot about the opioid crisis. We're starting to get Narcan deployed essentially everywhere. Unfortunately, this issue is now moving beyond just opioids, which means Narcan can't reverse an overdose death. So opioid deaths are actually down 52% because of more dangerous drugs like Trank, which is a horse tranquilizer.
Yeah.
That these overdose deaths are, they're still going to be a problem, and 387 is a huge number of people.
Yeah, I mean, every death like that is tragic, and thankfully, they're moving in the right direction, but so much work to do on that. Great story on that as well. All right, we'll take a break. Top of the hour news, some good stuff coming up in the next half hour. And then don't forget, we have an early out for Brewers Tigers. First pitch, I think, is 12:10 this afternoon. Chris and Steve, point taken, 620 WTMJ.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
All right, three more segments until we get to the Brewers. I'm sure there's people out there just chomping at the bit. Can't wait for us to stop talking so they can listen to the Brewers game.
I don't like that idea.
But we still have a couple more segments with Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. And I have not seen mine yet. So I don't know if my husband intercepted the mail. But assessments, properties are out.
The City of Milwaukee property assessments are out. Steve indicated Oak Creek are out. This follows a state law that they come at this time. What I'm going to talk about this next segment is going to be detailed to the City of Milwaukee, but it applies generally to every city in Wisconsin. If you're listening from Illinois or Idaho, your situation is going to be a little bit different.
It's good information. Listen carefully to this.
Yeah, there's some math involved, but very simple math, simple I think. Math. Some key numbers. So I'm going to hold up for the YouTube listeners. I'm holding up my assessment. It says the value of my property went up, and for those that are really good at math, you'll be able to tell how much my property is worth. It went up about $4,000 last year, and that's because of reevaluation. That doesn't mean I made $4,000 of improvements to my property. That means the assessor thinks, based on comparable property sales, that a house like mine in the location it is in Bayview would sell for the assessed value. That's state law defined fair market value. If you do make changes to your property, you can get, and it'll be labeled on your reevaluation. It'll say like, oh, we're basing this property change on this bathroom improvement project you did as well. You can see all this for yourself, for your neighbors. Go to assessments.milwaukee.gov. Only type in the street name. So like go for Wisconsin and then type in the first couple numbers. So 27. So you'll end up seeing then 275 West Wisconsin Avenue. You'll see what the former Grand Avenue Mall is assessed for. And now we'll get to the key part. How does this impact my property taxes? And this is where it's a little bit complicated, but it's simple at the end of the day. And that is the amount of money a city can collect in its property tax revenue is essentially fixed by the state of Wisconsin. Milwaukee last year, or this year, collects about $340 million. Even if they double the value of all the properties in the city via the assessment process, they can still only collect $340 million without a draconian state penalty, so they're not going to exceed their cap. And what that would mean is if the assessments keep going up, the tax rate, as it has now for the last at least 6 years, goes down pretty dramatically. So think about that as your assessment goes up. But the most important figure, and this is where this applies specifically to Milwaukee, the number for Oak Creek or for a different community will be different. You can get this from your assessor, is what is the average assessment increased at? In with Milwaukee, it increased by 6%. So in my case, even though my property went up in value by $4,000, that's only about a 1% increase. My tax bill next year will likely go down. I looked at Kristen's property out of curiosity. It went up almost 5%. Because the city of Milwaukee's assessment went up 6% on average, Kristen's share of the pie shrank, meaning her property tax bill, all else being equal, will likely go down. There are things that alter this. The MPS referendum boosted everyone's tax bills because the amount of money that MPS was allowed to collect went up by a tremendous amount of money. There's also a small inflationary increase allowed. So if your increase, if your assessment went up 6%, you'd probably see, in line with the city average, you'd probably see your tax bill go up a tiny amount. So there's a lot of little variables in there, newly designated tax-exempt properties, little variables. But generally speaking, if your assessment increases at a lower than the citywide average, your tax bill will go down.
Can I make a suggestion as the social media folks, like social media person? I think we need to get you a whiteboard and a camera. Yeah. I'll film it.
Yeah.
And I think we need Jeremy Janine explaining this with a whiteboard and visuals.
I love that.
And then we can post it so people can share it so they can stop freaking out and actually understand what this means for their property and their property taxes.
All right. Mike Spalding, get on it.
All right. There we go.
All right, let's take a quicker break because we got a really short half hour before we get to the Brewers pregame. And, of course, the first pitch, I think, is 12:10 against the Detroit Tigers. After the break, ice, not the kind that goes in your drink, and masks, not the kind that we wear on Halloween. After the break.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi, and we are talking to Jeremy Janine until the bottom of this hour, and then we pass it off to Brewers pregame. All right, so we've talked about this plenty of times, but the council, city council, common council, is continuing to talk about ice, masks, and it's unknown how much of it is symbolic and how much of it has teeth. So where are we now?
We have a passed policy as of Tuesday that prohibits law enforcement personnel from wearing face masks. Now, that was introduced as far back as early March. It was delayed by City Attorney Evan Goyke because it might not be, and this is a legal term, legal and enforceable. He has the right to say, hey, let me review this further. He did that. There were several changes. Peter Borgelis, who we talked about earlier, described it as watered down, but he said still progress. And then getting back to your initial point, the big question remains, yeah, the city of Milwaukee can apply this to Milwaukee County. They can probably apply it even to the Wisconsin State Patrol, Wisconsin National Guard, maybe. But they can't apply it to ICE, but they can put it in writing. And that's okay, because federal agencies, federal officials, have the ability to kind of bypass local ordinances with the supremacy of federal law. And federal law does not have this requirement. But the council still has attempted to narrowly tailor a policy. They're doing this, what they say, in response to a dramatic and possibly the largest, according to Robert Bauman, who's been on the council for 20 plus years now, largest outreach ever from the community about an issue is relating to ICE and what the city can do. But the watered down in nature of this policy now, it prohibits law enforcement officers from wearing a face mask, but only when they're interacting with the community. And it does not, or with the public, so they could, if they're getting ready to do a raid, they can wear a face mask. It includes a specific carve out for doing undercover operations, which, or SWAT operations, which I think we can all agree is reasonable on all fronts. And there was, as attached to this, a policy that all law enforcement needed to be identified and wear an ID badge. Well, that's been stripped in favor of, okay, we'd like you to wear an ID badge, but if you don't, we're allowed to ask you and you should tell us. And if not, we can fine you between $5,000 and $10,000 for not telling us who you represent, again, unless you're on an undercover or SWAT-like operation.
So, translate after
it.
All
of... Translate it all together. Yeah. What does this actually do?
Is it performative? Is it enforceable?
At the local level?
Have teeth?
I think it's going to make sure that the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office, City of Milwaukee, they follow these policies. I don't expect ICE is going to roll into town and follow this because they're just going to wave their U.S. flag and say, hey, we're federal officials. We don't have to worry about your local ordinances. The city can make hay out of, hey, we're going to take you to court. But even as the city attorney, an assistant city attorney admitted, they'll probably lose in that case.
It is interesting that post-Minneapolis, it is a quieter. So maybe I don't pay attention. Point,
as far as I just don't know if there's a, like, I don't know what the protocol is. I don't know how often people are seeing ICE agents in Milwaukee right now. It certainly is a very different vibe as far as the news coverage when it comes to ICE nationally. And it's like a 180.
I think that's fair, with the caveat that we're seeing now more targeted, it seems like, enforcement, and not in the traditional is the wrong word, the sense that we've seen ICE targeting largely Hispanic populations before. We've now seen the Department of Homeland Security attempting to deport locally Salah Sazor, who is heavily affiliated with the Palestinian community and has been an outspoken activist there. That case, which I have reporting on and we won't talk about on air today, but is the kind of the new, seems, target of the Trump administration.
So more specific to a person versus a general group.
Yes.
Someone asked me to ask you this weeks ago. I think we were talking about this topic, and maybe it was closely related to what was happening on the ground in Minnesota. Is there any understanding here in Wisconsin or southeastern Wisconsin, the number or the people that are self-deporting because of what they've seen in other places? Is that a real thing? Because I have some friends who are Hispanic, and they tell me that some of our friends just left. They just went back to wherever they were from.
I've heard that anecdotally in two cases.
Yeah.
I don't have any hard data, nor do I know even where I would go looking for such a thing.
Well, the government has put out some numbers on self-deportation, and they weren't insignificant. I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of people.
True, and I don't know what the baseline for that is. How many people self-deportate?
Every year anyway?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, like, what is the delta there? That I don't have. That is a fair question. That is an open question.
I'm just
what's
curious,
happening there?
Because unless you're living in a cave, Milwaukee has a very vibrant Hispanic community. I mean, right around us. I mean, it's everywhere. And I think that's something that if it's part of the story, that we should tell that story, because those are people who are on their own saying, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want our family to be torn apart. They're just leaving our country. And anybody who owns a business knows that that sector of our community is also very vital in getting real work done, tough jobs done, and in very important businesses across numerous different trades, and obviously in the state of Wisconsin, impacting agriculture as well. I'm giving you homework. Find out for me. All right, we'll take our final break on Point Taken. We have an early out for Brewers today. We'll hand it off to Neil Doyle at 11:30. But one more sort of a grab bag segment. We'll throw some short ones at you from Jeremy Janine. UrbanMilwaukee.com is their great resource for all things Milwaukee politics, news, culture, all that stuff. We'll take a quick break here on 620 WTMJ.
All right, a couple more minutes with Jeremy, a couple more minutes before the Brewers pregame. All right, Jeremy, what else you got for us?
I'm going to throw a couple more things at assessments at you, because I left out one thing, or left out a couple key things. One, if you're concerned about your property tax bill in the winter, now is the time to think about that. You have until Monday, May 18th, that's in state law, to contest your assessment. And you can start that through what's called the open book process, where you just reach out to your local assessor and say, hey, I think this is wrong. And probably add a because, and I'm going to give you a because to look at, because Kristen, you were asking about the value of your home. The simplest thing you can do to say, hey, the assessor, I think, got this wrong, just search online for and go to Zillow, or search for Zillow and then your address. And using a lot of the same methodology the assessor will do, it'll give you an estimate on the value of your house. If that value is similar to what the assessor came up with, I'm guessing that's probably pretty close to fair market value. Again, that's based on having all the data correct for your house, like it's 2,000 square feet, it has three bedrooms, it's located in this neighborhood. Something to think about there.
All right.
We'll move on to a grab bag of items. The 16th Street Bridge, formerly the James E. Grappi Unity Bridge, it was supposed to be closed, the north end, most of this year already. Then there was an emergency closure in December of the south end after it failed a fairly simple engineering test. and panic ensued. That bridge is essential for getting people, well, one, across the Menominee Valley, but down to the Menominee Valley. It's also a key link to Pottawatomie. It was supposed to reopen this month. It's now been delayed till July because of supply chain issues with getting a new steel beam fabricated. So expect more traffic problems crossing the Menominee Valley because the 27th Street Bridge remains closed all year as part of the Interstate 94 project. Back to City Hall with what happened on Tuesday. New violence prevention czar Karen Tyler, formerly head of the Department of Community Wellness and Safety, was confirmed, but on a very narrow vote. We have more about that in Urban Milwaukee. And then the city of Milwaukee approved dropping the Cesar Chavez name for South 16th Street, which starts at the end of the bridge. Alderperson Jocasta Zamarripa sat out that vote. She abstained, again, for concerns. We talked about this, I think, when Steve was gone. Concerns about there not being a replacement lined up that is just going back to 16th Street instead of to Dolores Huerta or another Latino community leader. And then finally...
Well, because there's a process. I mean, you don't just slap a new name on it. There's a process, just like there was a process for Cesar Chavez before all the information came about him. You follow the process. Why rush? What's the rush? Everybody gets there'll be another name at some point. I don't understand the angst that she has here. It seems silly to me.
Alderman Perez, who does represent the area, says he expects the community will have input on a new name by September. So this is not the end of this discussion, and a new name likely is coming. We'll see what happens there. Final thing, just a fun story I had last Friday. Alderman Lamont Westmoreland, who represents kind of the border of Milwaukee and Wauwatosa on the northwest side, he has a night job as a high school basketball referee.
Nice.
Cool.
And ever since first being elected in 2024, he's been telling me that he wants to do the state tournament. That's the pinnacle of the profession. Uh-huh. He did it this year.
Oh, no kidding.
For a game between Catholic Memorial of Racine and Lake Mills. It was a great experience. Now he wants to do the final. It was a semifinal game. I have a fun interview with him on Urban Milwaukee. West Side Alderman trades suit for stripes at state basketball tournament.
That's very fun.
As somebody who talks about refereeing and umpiring once a year with my friend Steve from Oak Creek, they need people.
I was going to say, I think there's still a shortage.
Yes, and that type of story, kudos to that gentleman, because that, well, it's not easy, and you get a lot of grief. You make some money, but you're not getting rich on it, but the commitment to it is awesome, and the fact that you got to celebrate that at the highest level, state, which is awesome by, on its own. The state tournament is fantastic. Men's or boys and girls is just awesome to watch. I love it. That's a positive news story from Jeremy.
Positive news story. We love it.
What are you looking ahead to in the next
week? Well, for me personally, we were talking about it at the break. The Milwaukee Film Festival runs through April 30th.
Yes.
I'm going to be seeing as many movies as I can.
Yeah.
Urban Milwaukee is a sponsor of the Cream City Cinema series, which is all the locally made films. We have a list of all those on our website. I'm also going to break some news this afternoon about a Bayview apartment building that may be coming to a church. A little tease there. I'm sure we'll talk about it next week. And then one thing I'm watching is 1840, their brewing equipment is up for auction. The brewery sadly closed when one of the founders was diagnosed with cancer and has since passed.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot because you are a Bayview guy. What's the new hot spot in Bayview? I want to know what it is because I'd like to go
room
to
service.
Bayview.
Huh? Have you got a room service
yet? No.
Oh, room service, top of your
list.
Tell
me about it. You got a minute.
It is a Taiwanese street food.
Like that?
But it's a high-end experience. It's probably not to your interest, but it's very Instagram friendly. The food is very much to your interest. Exactly. You're just not an Instagram guy, to the best of my knowledge.
Oh, that's true. But I love restaurants.
It's part of a complex with Todd, I Believe I Can Fry, which is a fun carryout spot for great Asian food. There is a cafe coming to the back of it, and a jewelry store is set to open, and I think this month yet, in the front.
It's
one of them. There's lots of hot spots, though.
Yeah, that's why I always want to tap into that. And I love Slice in Bayview. You know what I'm talking about? That little piece.
Classic Slice.
Love that place. It doesn't get talked about enough. You go in, and the slices are as big as your head. I mean, or bigger. And the pizza's amazingly fantastic. Classic Slice.
Wonderful spot.
And here's a little bit of insight. Now, if you go park on the back side of it, there's a neighbor that has beautiful lilacs. Like the best I've ever seen in Milwaukee. And this is the time of year to see
it. You didn't
get
to let me say anything of why I'm going to be gone for the next
quick,
week.
No,
the
quickly,
music's
quickly.
Going. We got to go.
Quickly.
I will be back a week from Monday. So you'll have to deal with Steve for the tomorrow and all of next week.
Okay, I don't like the way you put that, but you got it in. All right, we're going to hand it off to news. And then, of course, Brewer's coming up. Here's Neil Doyle.